This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Latinos are no different when it comes to vulnerabilities of mental health issues when compared to the rest of the population. However, a community's mental health is impacted by cultural norms and attitudes concerning feeling comfortable asking for help. And as comedian George Lopez points out in a stand-up routine, for many Latinos, a cultural norm is not to ask for help, but to act tough.
We raise our kids tough, so we are unafraid. We have no fear. Not like kids now. I'm scared, Mom. They got chips in their neck. They can't leave the yard. Oh my God! Amber alert, Amber alert. We used to go missing for 3 days and no one would have given a about us. They wouldn't even look. It's quiet. Déjalo, wherever he is, it's quiet. I don't want him. I got 5 kids. I'll make them look like 6. Mingo, cabrones, mingo, intertwine.
Today on The Source, we're going to focus on common challenges many Latinos face in seeking mental health care. And we invite you to call in with your experiences and questions. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Rosalie Aguilar. She is a project coordinator at Salud America at UT Health San Antonio. Also with us is Dr. Soad Mitchelson, a senior medical director and psychiatrist at the Clarity Child Guidance Center. Also with us in the studio is Yadi Gonzalez, the marketing specialist for Salud America, a nationwide network of for healthy change at UT San Antonio, UT Health San Antonio. And with us online is Deborah Rosales Elkins, a peer policy fellow for the National Alliance on Mental Health, NAMI San Antonio, here in Texas. So welcome all of you. It's great to have you here. So I'm really curious about the research and what y'all found to define, you know, this finding that you have, that there are a number of Latinos who are having trouble reaching out, asking for help with mental health issues. So, Rosalie, can you talk about the research?
Sure. So just to give everyone an overview, this is part of a series of research reviews that we are conducting at Salud America. We're a national organization funded through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we work to build strong Latino communities, to investigate really the most important factors impacting Latino kids. And in the past, we focused a lot on childhood obesity because that has been a huge issue with Latino kids. But now what we've come to learn over the years is that mental health is also a very important issue to the Latino community. There are several stigmas that Latino families face, that children are now impacted by bullying at school, and the migration experience for many of these kids is also creating a lot of anxiety, stress, and depression in Latino children. So overall, what we did was we conducted a comprehensive review because there really isn't enough known. We're continuing to learn. We wanted to highlight the most important things so that people could go to their leaders and begin to work towards more solutions in their communities, and to really work towards offering these kids a better chance towards addressing mental health issues. And so in the review, one thing that we found that really stood out is that 22% of Latino youth have depressive symptoms. And this is a rate higher than most other groups other than Native American youth. We also found alarmingly that 1 in 4 Latina high schoolers had thought about committing suicide, and that over 30% of Latino students felt hopeless and sad. And as a result, they participate in less activities or less involved in their communities. So these are really the bigger issues that we're seeing Latino kids face. Mental health services, access to mental health services is also a huge issue. We're seeing disparities between Latino kids and non-Latino kids. Only 8% of families said that their child had ever had any kind of mental health services.
Do we know if conditions are improving or getting worse? Is there a comparative, a point to compare this to?
Well, I mean, as long as a disparity exists, as long as there's a difference existing in the Latino population, we're concerned because we need to be concerned. We need
sure.
to be striving towards health equity. We need to be striving towards...
Was this the first time y'all took a survey like this and we have anything to compare it with?
Well, in this research, it goes beyond just one survey. These are multiple surveys, multiple studies that were done by investigators all across the U.S. So what we really aimed to do was put all of that information in a resource that that anyone can use, that anyone can go to and find these most important issues to tackle.
I'm just asking because I know that right now there's a climate in America that many people, Latinos, feel that things have gotten a lot more hostile.
Sure.
With the DACA ruling, also with a lot of things that were said in a recent presidential campaign, a lot of anti-sanctuary cities legislation that's been passed here in Texas. A lot of Latinos feel that there's more hostility, and if that's being trickled down and it's impacting the mental health of some of our children. And so let me ask you, Dr. Mitchelson, if you're a clinician, can you tell me what you've seen in your practice?
Sure. So in reference to your question, I think that an important thing to understand in research is that it's never, you can have a snapshot, but when you come up with conclusions, they take some time to come up with conclusions. And a lot of things can change in the environment, right? So you're speaking about the political issues that are going on right now that can contribute to the stress of the Latino family. Will we see that right now? We might not see the results of or the effects of that for some time down the line. So it's going to take a while before the research can say. But I can tell you that in the office, we see the effects constantly. So I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and I see kids that are from the Hispanic population. I'm originally from South America. I'm a Spanish speaker. That's one of the deficits that we have is cultural competence and enough psychiatrists or even therapists that speak in Spanish, right? Most of the kids speak English. They're fluent. But when you treat children, you don't treat only the child. You treat the whole family. You have to understand the family dynamics and what they're going through. And a lot of these parents do not know the language, and that's one of their first barriers. They do not know the English language, so they need a psychiatrist or a health provider that can communicate with them fluently and culturally competent.
And then when you approach them in Spanish, they're willing to what? Hear you out and understand what's happening?
Oh, not only that, just understanding, right? So if you are speaking to a family that only speaks Spanish, you give recommendations. If your recommendations are chopped up, right, in a completely different language and they're not understanding everything, then those recommendations are usually not followed on. There's also the rapport, right, the relationship, the trust. If you speak with someone that has your same language, right, then you trust. And the nuances are very, very important. I mean, in the Hispanic population, Latin population, we have a lot of different words that are used that have different meanings. You can't translate them into English.
Right, so knowing those nuances. All right, we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to take a quick break. Our phone lines are open if you've got a question or a comment as we talk about mental health in Latino children and being able to reach out to help. And who reach out to who? That's the next question. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Latino youth are far more likely than their peers to have mental health issues which go unaddressed and untreated. Why? Well, immigration, cultural identity, poverty, bullying, discrimination, other factors can create high levels of stress. But there's good news, too. Interventions into a family, a school, common community stressors have a positive effect on mental health of this population. So what we first thing we got to do, identify, talk about, make sure people know that there is help available. Give us a call if you want to join the conversation, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Yadi Gonzalez, you're the marketing specialist for Salud America. Let me ask you about when we talk about the Latino community, it's a very diverse community when, in and of itself. We can break it down from countries of origin. There's a lot of difference between whether or not you're from Puerto Rico or Cuba or Mexico, and also a lot of difference of how long your family has been in the United States. Many people have been here multiple generations, and Spanish barriers is not a problem, but there's a lot of cultural ties within the whole group. So how do y'all address that?
Right. So one of the things we found with the study is honing in on the programs that are available. So within your schools, children's schools, and community resources. So we look at things like those stresses are still there. So whether you are third, fourth, fifth generation, say Mexican American, or you are first generation, your experiences are different. However, that having cultural that cultural connection with someone that understands you and understands maybe where your family comes from, why you might use a certain word to describe something, just they get you. And that's really important, especially in a school setting. And that, too, it kind of helps with different things that you don't see the crossover in. So maybe like bullying. So school bullying prevention programs, that's something that's very helpful, too, with this. If you have an accent, maybe you don't realize you have an accent. You're getting bullied for your accent. And that has to do with who you are as a person. The Latino kids that are getting bullied, because of that, that's something that's addressed there. Another thing to consider in the research that we found was other programs, like, for example, here in San Antonio, the Early Childhood Wellbeing Project, that helps teachers make mental health referrals for kids ages 0 to 6. So those are, again, another program that helps to address the issue at the local level.
Deborah Rosales-Elkins, a peer policy fellow for the National Alliance on Mental Health Texas. Can you add to that? I mean, how does that impact you when you try to provide services?
It's very difficult trying to find providers who are culturally competent, who understand how respect, familiarity, and trust are core values that we have within our communities. And so trying to help people navigate that is something we try to do at all of our NAMIs, which stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And what we connect them when they're going to the local mental health authorities to let them know that they have rights to ask about, you know, what do you know about my culture? And also, I think something that is very helpful for young Latinos is to have groups of finding people who are having the same struggles that they are. There is you know, some models of care there in North America called Life is Precious, where they bring together a Latino young women and have them have a peer group of support. So great to talk to someone who is experiencing trying to acculturate into the United States and yet going home to a very traditional household and the challenges around that. So either through churches or schools, having those support systems where they can be with their peers to normalize what they're going through, I think is very helpful.
Let's go to the phone lines. And this is Pauline. And Pauline, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to bring up also the subject of with depression within the Latino / Hispanic community here, especially here in San Antonio, because for me, I realized I do have depression. I've realized that I accepted it for the past 2 years, and especially with older, when you have parents that are coming from an older generation, whether they grew up here in the U.S. or, for example, Mexico, for me, some, even with whatever is the economic status, it's hard for them to understand when you need help and they don't want to understand.
Pauline, thank you for the call. I think you brought up a very important point. Dr. Mitchelson, identifying a depression within yourself or someone in your family, it seems like it's chronically undiagnosed.
And actually, I agree with that. I think mental health in general disorders are underdiagnosed, especially in the Latino population. And Pauline brings up a very, very good point. When Hispanics or Latinos migrate, they're one of the major characteristics is grit and resiliency. So George Lopez is not off on that one. That's their coping skill. So they really try to manage or even actually neglect, you know, the negative emotions and feelings. Once the individual settles in, then they continue with that. So they don't identify, right? The newer, let's say the older generations don't identify with ease the symptoms of depression. And symptoms of depression in Latino or Hispanics are a little bit different. They tend to be more somatic. And somatic means there's more complaints of aches and pains and headaches. So if you don't know that, you can misinterpret that as a medical condition, and the person might end up at their PCP or in the emergency room when actually what they're dealing with is depression. That's a clear example of cultural competence right there and needing it for the Hispanic population.
And how do you address that? I mean, telling someone that your aches and pains are being caused by your mental condition, that's a hard sell sometimes.
It is. And it's a, when once you, that's why also the communication is very important. Because to come to that conclusion, you have to share a whole bunch of other things, right? Your experiences, the stress you're going through, how these symptoms developed, where they came up from. And then through trust and rapport, the person starts feeling like they can trust what you're saying. That's where it all starts, is establishing relationships, and that's where it's very different. It's very, very difficult. I'm sorry, not different, but it's very difficult to establish relationships with mental health providers because, honestly, there's not enough out there.
Yeah, not enough mental health providers, and particularly in some communities, there are none. We know in counties in Texas, and particularly along the border, they don't exist. So Deborah Rosales-Elkins over at NAMI, can you talk about that?
I certainly can. You know, I think you bring up an excellent point, because in rural areas, that's where we're having our biggest challenges. In this last legislative session, we worked on many mental health bills that involved telemedicine. And a lot of concerns came up that it wasn't being good medical care because the person isn't being seen in person. And I agree that's ideal. But I think that having access to mental health providers through telemedicine is a good bridge to get started. And so I hope we see the opportunity to be able to access that care in areas that have none.
So Rosalie Aguilar over at the Salud America, in looking at this problem, and we want to be a solution-based as we talk mm-hmm. about this. So do you think, as you looked at the research, that people would be open to talking about their issues and having move forward?
Sure. So I think one of the big things to consider here is that mental health care should begin, I think, you know, even before a lot of our population doesn't have access to medical care. And a lot of times, you know, with Latinos, over 30% of Latinos live in poverty. And as a result, they don't necessarily believe they have access to a mental health care provider. So, you know, of course, there's also stigma towards going and finding the right person to talk to. So maybe they are looking towards the religious community or, you know, somebody to talk to that may not be trained properly to address those issues.
But there are a lot of people in the religious community, clergy, who have been trained. They have received some of this training. I'm going to get another caller in before we go to our bottom of the hour break. And this is Antonio. Antonio, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I believe this is rooted in way deeper, and part of it is the labeling of indigenous people incorrectly, and which just puts them up towards whatever legislation, and at this point, anti-immigration legislation, creating this anxiety that they're just floating in the wind with whatever labeling they are placed upon them. But mainly these are, again, you're talking about rural areas. It's because these are indigenous people, indigenous cultures, and they don't know what to do anymore. So this goes back to colonialism. You're talking about how badly our mind has been damaged and traumatized. that goes way, way back to those times. And there'll be no cure, no justice, until the correct identification of indigenous people is given back to them and all the ancient ancestral migratory rights are restored so they can have that confidence as an actual people and not just as some made-up label identification.
Antonio, thank you for the call. And some people have referred to Mexican Americans as a thrice conquered people, and you talk about the cultural imperialism that the United States has put upon individuals and stripping them of their multi-generational identity going back before the conquest. That means something to a lot of people. You know, you can hear it in Antonio's voice. I mean, these things are very real to him, and they do impact his mental health. So, Yadi, when y'all are doing your research, is that there?
It is there. It is there as much as it can be. So, I mean, it's hard to say that everyone is lumped into one big group, but, you know, there's differences in looking at this and in terms of research. So Hispanic, Spanish-speaking, Latino, it means you're of the descent that you're of. You know, there's no way to really say for each and every segment, but if it's Spanish-speaking, you can, and, you know, and depending on where you're from. But in looking at, especially with children and understanding their backgrounds, and which what the research really hones in on is starting early with helping them understand how to cope with stressors, family stressors, whatever those are. So if that is something that has to do with their cultural identification, that's something, too, that mental health professionals, schools, teachers can definitely help with that, too.
And Rosalie, in providing that information towards their cultural identity, is there research there that shows reading things like San Francisco Narrows and learning more about your cultural background, does that have an impact?
Oh, definitely. I think every bit of literature out there is you know, so important to our community. But even beyond the literature, there are certain programs that are being formed in schools, in the school setting. There's this model called the whole school, whole child, whole community model that was recently, work was published on this by the CDC. And what they're trying to get at is really emphasizing that we need to come at this from all different angles. Programs that that have to do with physical activity, we need to start thinking about how we're going to incorporate also mental health, social and emotional regulation in those programs as well, teaching these things to kids. And although these studies are just starting to be conducted, we're seeing positive results. We're seeing that these programs can do a world of difference for these kids.
But teaching the kids that they're not a conquered people, that they have these roots that are strong and vibrant and rich, and that the blood that flows through their veins has so much incredible history and accomplishment that it's more than what you would typically get in those old Texas high school history books that I got when I was a kid. There's so much more there.
Absolutely, there really is. And I think it's also educating the community as a whole, because it goes beyond just teaching the Latino children, you know, about their heritage and you know, teaching them the literature that they can relate to. But it also goes into teaching the rest of the children and the rest of the school of, you know, of
Okay, we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. As we talk about mental health in Latino children, what are the challenges? What are the opportunities? We can tap into the family and also to the local community, other areas where there's points of contact with mental health professionals, ways that we can provide some opportunities to help kids grow. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. New research suggests that Latino children are more likely to suffer from depression and other mental health issues, but only 8% of Latinos say their child has received mental health services. So what can be done in order to provide those services and make those connections? We want to hear your stories. What have you seen out there in your life and people around you and your family? Give us a call. The number is 210-614 for 8980. Was there reluctance in your family in order to reach out to a mental health professional? Did they eventually do so? And then you found some positive results. Give us a call. We'd love to hear your story. 210-614-8980. So, Dr. Soad Mitchelson, you're the senior medical director and psychiatrist at the Clarity Child Guidance Center. Is there a culture of silence? Is that part of the issue here?
Definitely, there's a culture of silence. There's a culture of silence of stigma and a culture of silence of survival. So when we talk about the culture of silence of stigma, is that in the Hispanic population, there is great stigma of mental health. There is in general, not only the Hispanic population. But to acknowledge a mental health issue is a sign of weakness in general. To acknowledge that your child has mental health issues is usually identified as a parenting deficit. So the parent has to put themselves out there. That's how they feel. I'm basically, as a parent, acknowledging that there's something wrong in my parenting to be able to seek help and then be able to identify the mental health in the child. The other is basically the survival the silence of survival. How do you seek help if you're at risk of that changing your life completely? In other words, if your family is struggling with mental health, but you are an undocumented individual, how do you put yourself out there to seek help when you're concerned that maybe you're going to be deported, basically? And unfortunately, right now, that is the population that is feeling the most stress of uncertainty, stress of identification with their culture, economic stress. I just imagine.
You feel under siege. But it's not just you, but it might be even someone in your family. You just don't want to draw any attention to your family. You feel like, even if this is, abuelita or a cousin or someone, you just feel like, let's just keep our head down and get through this.
Yes, and the kids actually feel that burden also. So you have a teenager that is, they're documented, they were born here, they go to high school, they do their thing, right? They have no problem. But if they are identified where their parents might be identified, they are held, they feel, and they hold themselves responsible for that.
So what about when you hear the stories about, my dad, worked very hard, never took a day off, always, was provided for the family and didn't accept any excuses. You just got to keep on trugging along. Those stories of endurance and survival, and you hear those things and you're trying to hold yourself, compare yourself to those things. And sometimes you don't come up, you come up a little short, and maybe it hurts your own sort of self-esteem. I mean, is that something that's out there?
I think that's more of a perspective, right? So different people have experienced different situations. I think the older generations, like we mentioned before, resilience and grit, they had to really struggle and have a lot of struggles to come over. They sacrificed from their place of origin to come over and sacrifice also in the United States for their children. So maybe their children did have a less difficult life, right? But they have their own stressors that their parents didn't have. These kids have to deal with schools that are 1,000 people in their schools. That's not what you run into in countries in Latin America or, Central America. They're smaller schools. There's also less cohesiveness amongst individuals, I think, when they're here, right, in the United States. And I'm talking about, like, family cohesiveness, like the block of families that, the five families that are together and help each other out. That's more typical of the Latin American, South American countries, not so much here in the United States. So these kids have a completely different set of stressors, not necessarily less, just different.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. This is Jordan. And Jordan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I was calling in because I felt like I fit in that categorized category. Because, I'm Mexican, and, my father murdered my mother when I was two, so I know how it feels growing up, not getting any help, finding out at the age of 23 I was bipolar type 2 and borderline personality disorder. So, I feel like I fit that.
And so you've gotten help, obviously, because you've got a diagnosis.
Yes, I mean, it, it got to a point where, you know, I was detained by the police because I was having psychotic episodes. I tried committing suicide, but yeah, I got help. You know, I went into services. They gave me meds. I got treated, and I'm doing better now. It's funny because I'm actually on my way to right now.
Jordan, thank you for calling in. I sure do appreciate that. Deborah Rosales-Elkins, over at the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI. There is a crossover here with people who don't get the help with mental health, and then they have encounters with the law enforcement.
Absolutely. You know, we need to recognize as a society that many of the Latinos out there are having extreme trauma. Imagine going to school every day and being worried that your family won't be there when you get home. And you live this prolonged over months and years. And then when you don't ever have anyone address that and help you through it, mental illness can manifest in any of us under the right circumstances. And we need to be there. I love the idea that was presented earlier about investing in our schools to help give coping skills and to help people navigate what that looks like and to reduce the stigma so people will reach out so that they don't end up in our jails for behaviors that they can't control and can help to navigate the system better for themselves.
Rosalie Aguilar over at Salud America. What about having training mental health interpreters and promotoras working with in schools with kids at an early age?
Right. That is one of the main findings in our study. We're learning that having access to bilingual social workers helped reduce depressive symptoms in Latino kids who were suffering from PTSD. We're also learning that promotoras can be a big help in the school setting.
Talk about what that is.
So a promotora is essentially a community health worker, somebody from within the Latino community who can relate easily to the parents. So they really, what ends up happening is parents and families feel they can really open up with the promotora. It's not like speaking to somebody who may be a physician or somebody. There's a different dynamic that goes on when you can speak to someone who you see as your peer. And so a promotora who is trained in community health and in working to identify certain mental health issues can really be that bridge towards helping families find access to care, find access to a provider who can help the children or even the parents who might be suffering from any kind of mental health condition.
Okay. Back to the phone lines with Colleen. And Colleen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. One thing I noticed here in San Antonio is that there's not that much widespread notice of all these free services that we have in the community. For example, I didn't know that Catholic Charities, they have counseling services, professional counseling services, either at a reduced rate or for free. And that I think to help spread the message is to put up signs, put up Facebook stuff, things that are more visible so that people within our community, especially the ones who are more likely not to have this access, should have this form of availability visible and not something that they have to search, because most people don't normally search for these services. They mostly will go through it if they can see it.
So thank you, Colleen, for that. And Yadi Gonzalez over at Salud America, are those services out there?
Services are out there, and you know, they're accessible to everyone. I know a lot of different groups, and especially Promotora is a big part of what they do, is making sure that information is at the forefront and connecting people to services if it's something that they don't easily have access to themselves. I will say, just on an anecdotal thing, my godmother is a Promotora because she reached out to my grandmother and it turned into like a thing. So for us, that for me resonates into something where someone brought something to the forefront to my family, and this woman brought mental health and other things and said, hey, you know, diabetes, these things cause issues. So I wanted to chime in on that too, the importance of having that, because that for me had a personal impact on my family.
So you're promoted in your family.
Yeah.
And so trusted individual.
Madrina, my godmother.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They knew that she knew the system, and mm-hmm. she could be an important navigator to help mm-hmm. them access these. And so you had a success story.
Yeah, we did. We did. And it ended up helping getting my grandmother recognizing that she had the diabetes, as she would call it, and didn't want to recognize that and all the symptoms that came with it. But then all the other issues she did have because of it. So again, just getting resources. And then my grandfather, and it just was a trickle effect. And then she started talking to our neighbor, and just other people started to get to talking about what's out there and what's available. And some of those services were, you know, come from humble roots. So they were at free or at low cost. So.
Okay. We're going to take another break. We'll come back. We'll take some more phone calls. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about mental health in Latino children in the Latino community. What's out there to help these children? How can we tap into the network that's already out there? How can we do things to try to stop bullying and other issues that's hurting the mental health of our children? Give us a call, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Despite the high rate of mental health issues faced by Latino children, disparities persist in how they can use and receive mental health services. Research shows that 22% of Latino children are depressed, a higher rate than any other minority besides Native peoples, and they endure much stress, discrimination, and bullying. We're talking about that this afternoon. Give us a call with your experiences, 210-614-8980, and Carlos is on the line. Carlos, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Okay, I just wanted to start off with my daughter. You know, she was diagnosed with depression. She has anxiety issues, and she has also PTSD from a two-auto accident. She was in very successive auto accident. I mean, within a few months, very bad accident. So she's got a little bit of PTSD, too. So she's going to college now. She's doing great. She's taking her medications as she needs to. And the thing is about school, what I wanted to mention about school is she's on a disability list, right? She's got a 4.0, taking 18 hours a semester. She's a great kid. And the school doesn't have to recognize her disability, which I'm like, okay, so you file for a disability there. You know, you're going to school, but the teachers don't have to recognize it. How fair is that? And to a point in case is she was having a little bit of a breakdown one day. You know, it was a bad day. Bad things had happened. So she goes to school, and she has also is dealing with other illnesses, gastroparesis on top of fibromyalgia and other things. So she's in school, has an episode, gets into an argument with a teacher. She walks out, you know, because she knew it was getting to a point where she had to get away. So she walked away, walks down the hall, exiting the building. She kicks the door open with her foot. So at that point, a janitor sees her, or a building maintenance guy or some guy sees her and says, hey, you need blah, 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 and just jumps her case, whatever he said. And she kept telling him to get away. Just leave me alone. Leave me alone. And he just kept persisting. And so it triggered. I mean, it just full-on trigger. So she dropped the F-bomb on him. Get the away from me. Now she has a year of academic probation because they don't have to recognize the illness. It's great to be diagnosed. It's great that you try and seek help. But when the community doesn't have to acknowledge it, there's something wrong there.
Okay, Carlos, thank you very much for the story. Let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, I want to go to Deborah Rosales-Elkins over at the National Alliance on Mental Illness. When you're in an environment like at a college or university and you do apply for those considerations, don't they have to follow those things?
Well, that's interesting. I have to admit that on the college level, I am not sure about that. But I do know that there have been some legislation put forward to where that higher education facilities need to have mental health training and mental health services available. We all do better when we all do better. And the more education that facilities have, such as higher places of learning, the better they can respond to people who are having mental health challenges. So I think the gentleman who called, and I'm so glad that he shared that story, it brings up the importance of the work we have going forward in making sure that our educational systems are well informed and trained on how to help students through crisis.
Yeah, I'm glad that Carlos called as well and told the story, because I think he brings up illustrates a great point that these issues do not exist in a vacuum. They impact people's lives, and they can cascade out of control and lead to other problems. So, Dr. Sawad Mitchelson, I mean, do you see things like this?
Oh, definitely. The level of education of teachers, just individuals that work with young adults as well as our adolescent population, for them to know how to respond to these moments of crisis without being judgmental is very, very important. Because when you are in a moment of crisis and you're addressing a person that's agitated, right, that might even appear to be angry and aggressive, you really don't know what's going on at that moment. So empathy is very important to address, and also being able to know how to maybe help them out in de-escalating the situation, not making it worse.
Okay, another caller. This is Myra. And Myra, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My situation is I have a 13-year-old son that goes to public school, and he's like, every time he puts full star, he gets very frustrated, very anxious, and he's, you know, but this has been going on for years, and I've been going to like psychiatrist counselors, and if I want to go like to a real good one with the insurance, the co-pays are very, very high. And the only thing that I see that they do for my child is that they just give him meds, and sometimes meds don't work on every, you know, the same way that work in another child. And, this started happening, you know, he was diagnosed with anxiety, but that was back in Puerto Rico. Here, I've been telling, like, psychiatrists that's what the problem, and, you know, I've been wanting to get help, but it seems like when we go, my child doesn't talk, and nothing gets solved, and, you know, and this started happening ever since my mom passed away of cancer, and then he lost two grandpas from back to back. And every time this happens, he gets very emotional and very, you know, and it seems like I want to ask professional help, but I don't get it.
All right, Myra, thank you for the call. Dr. Mitchelson, two issues there. One of them is, you know, the grief is a powerful emotion, and it's hard to process at times. So you lose family members, but also the tendency for some clinicians to overprescribe medication.
Well, I think it's important that we recognize that medication is not it's not the answer to mental health, right? It's a component of treating mental health. Mm-hmm. Especially in the Latino family, we need to recognize also that medications are very scary, right? When you read the inserts on medication, they describe a lot of side effects. So it's important, the education about the medications, the correct diagnosis, those things have to come first. But more important than that is the rapport again. I can't repeat that word more than enough, the trust, and being able to help the family change their dynamics and learn coping skills to deal with the mental health issues. So depression is a biological condition. But depression leads to a lot of different behaviors. When you grow up looking at the tunnel as always a dark tunnel, you start seeing the world like that, and you're developing relationships in a very negative way. The medication doesn't necessarily change that. therapy helps to change that. The interactions with the family, the friends, the peers helps to change that.
So if your world at home is about slamming doors and hollering and screaming and long silent treatments and just a lot of hostility, I mean, is that's not a good place to raise a child in. And should the whole family try to go in and say, let's figure out a better way? Maybe we need a counselor. Is that something that would maybe a first step?
Definitely. And I think if the family goes together, then usually there's more acceptance of the treatment, right? Usually, though, in the Hispanic population, the first person that goes is the mom, right? And then the grandmother brings, because they're very involved, the grandparents in the Hispanic population. And then you can bring in the grandfather and the dad. But eventually, once you normalize that it's okay for the family to be involved in treatment, then you see a lot of participation. They become very empowered. And again, it is important. I think our society, more so in the past, and now that we're trying to break with the stigma, we can say that it is not all about medication. I can't tell you how many times I've had parents come into the office and we say, your child does not have any diagnosis. It might be stress related to this, and this is their reaction. Sometimes kids, when they're anxious, can look angry. They're not angry, they're just scared. And so they respond in a defensive manner. I think adults do that as well, also on medications.
And Rosalie Aguilar, you said that bullying was a major issue here. I want to make sure we don't forget about that.
Absolutely. So that is one of the main points highlighted in this research. And it actually turns out that it's a big concern for Latino parents. Research has shown that it's actually the number one health concern of Latino parents for their kids. And at least 17% of Latino students report being bullied at school. And if you really think about the negative effects and impacts that can have. I mean, things like substance abuse and damage to self-esteem, the results of this bullying, we really need to find solutions and look towards programs that can decrease bullying. And so there are solutions, and some of the programs that are described in our study talk about school-based bullying prevention programs, and what we're seeing is that bullying actually decreases by up to 25% with these programs in place at schools.
So trying to get people to recognize that this is happening, we've got to put a lid on it, and helping the kids that were targeted realizing this is really not personal, this is just some sort of social outburst which they became the lightning rod of, and try and bolster them and give them some help and allow them to, you know, move on with their lives and realize that things get better, and this can get better, especially after we have talks like this and we talk about this is a major issue that can be dealt with this through recognition. Is that it?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's always hope, especially in kids. I mean, we are just beginning, and we're definitely not through all the possibilities of interventions.
All right, Dr. Solad Mitchelson, she is a senior medical director, psychiatrist at Clarity Child Guidance Center. Also with us is Rosalie Aguilar over at Salud America, Yadi Gonzalez also at Salud America, and with us on the line is Deborah Rosales Elkins over at the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Texas NAMI. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.